Accession number 19068, Reel 1.
Mr. Ken Chesson, Reel 1.
Chesson, born the 11th of the 3rd, 1924, and born at Ottom in Kent. I have there was five of us in family. I've got two brothers and two sisters, but I didn't do that very well.
That's all right. Whereabouts did you come in the family?
I was number two.
What did your father do?
My father was a farm worker, a carter, which is a horseman, and then he having moved about in Kent on different farms, he then came to Hambledon in Surrey, where he had the job as a farm bailiff, which was considered as a farm foreman or manager in those days. And he had that job from 1930-31 until he died in 1947.
Do you know how your parents met?
I've no idea.
What did your mother do?
My mother, she, besides running the family home, during the season she worked on farms as fruit picking, and while in Kent, hop picking during the seasons. And other than that, she did, at the latter part of the time, do a certain amount of housework for people.
What year did you come to Hambledon?
Came to Hambledon 1932. And so therefore, my schooling was there at a very small village school, just two teachers. So really the education was very, very limited. But in those days we nearly all left at school at 14. And the work that we were able to get was either farming, gardening, or working in a local brickyard. That was mainly the work, unless we could get to be apprentice for a builder, which was a very, very limited. And I very much wanted to go into the army as a boy from school and be an apprenticed. But it was a case again, some forms assigned by my father, who had been in World War One, and he said to me, "Well, no way am I signing those forms." He said, "I know what the army is like, what war is like." He said, "And I'm not signing those." He said, "When you get old enough, if you want to go, that is up to you."
How did you feel about that?
And I felt very, very, very sad. I was keen to go, and I thought it would be a good outlet and give me a trade that they, you know, would be a proper apprentice. And so I finished up like a lot of the boys working on the farm. And I carried on then until I was 18, and then I came into Guildford with a pal of mine, and we both volunteered for the army then, and that was in March, a little later than that, in 1942. And actually I went to Reading to Brock Barracks in June 1942, joined the ITC, the 17th ITC. I didn't really want that. I didn't want infantry really. I wanted to go into the Royal Armoured Corps, which was, as a young man, was a great attraction. Anyway, I went into the infantry and into the Royal Berkshire Regiment there at the 17th ITC at Reading, and really, I think it had its blessings. I came through all right. If I'd have been in a tank regiment, well, who knows?
What was it like in your family at the outbreak of war?
It was one really of a difficult to understand, really, but I always remember. I said to my father, "Do you think it'll soon be over? It won't be a long war." And he said, "Oh, it will." He said, "It'll be a long, hard war." And I said, "Oh, I don't really think so." But he proved me wrong. And on the day that war was declared, I was working at a ARP post at some farm buildings in the village, and the war was declared on that Sunday morning that we were building the RAP post. And obviously from then on life just felt to me that it had changed. And we in agriculture anyway, it very soon came like that they wanted more food, and we worked very long hours. We came into double summertime. And
could you explain on that? Could you explain double summertime?
Well, as it is now, we put the clocks forward 1 hour, and instead of that they put them forward the 2 hours. So in all you could work quite comfortably in quite good light until about 11 o'clock or so at night. And by doing that, working like that, and then as the war progressed, things gradually got worse. Then they thought that the country was going to be invaded. They started up the LDV, which had the nickname Look, Duck and Vanish. And then, after some time, it was brought in as the Home Guard. And when, as soon as I could, I joined the Home Guard. And I used to work during the, as I say, in the summertime, spring and summertime, very long hours. And then 2 nights a week I would go home, have a bit of food, and then go off and go to a beauty site out of Hambledon called Hyden Ball. And there we would go on to the highest point there at Hyden Ball so that we could observe. And they had an area of farmland out below where they put up poles, or cut tree trunks, pine tree trunks, and they were put in, and that was to stop gliders, and we were out to for observation for that sort of thing. And also we had quite a good view looking from there towards London, and we could see quite a lot that was going on. And but as time went on, we moved into the village, and we had quite a nice hut, comfortable quarters. And from there, we patrolled the roads. It was, you know, 2 hours on and 4 hours off, the same and more as doing an army guard duty, but you were patrolling all the time. And we patrolled the roads, and it was just a case of observation. But there was an awful lot of jokes about the Home Guard, and I think there's been some very stupid films. But I think that under the circumstances, we done a very good job. It was a bit of a laugh. Our weapons were very, very poor. We did eventually, just before I left, we did get supplied with some better rifles and one or two automatic weapons. But we, first off, I remember the pal that I joined the army with, him and I were together in the Home Guard, and we were issued with an old German rifle, and we had to wait until a plane came down and we managed to get the cartridges from the crash plane for the rifle that we were issued with. But at least we had so many, and we used to go off. It's a most stupid thing to do, but we even went off into an area where it was fairly sheltered in with banking, and we used to shoot rabbits with the rifle. So that was a bit of a bravado in my younger days.
You had a number of hobbies around that time. Could you just talk about those?
I beg your pardon?
A number of hobbies around this time.
Oh, right. Yes, I did. I had a great fun with old motorbikes. I had several different mates that you never hear of today, and had great fun. There was about four of us in the group, and we used to go to scrap yards and different places wherever we could get bits. Most difficult, really, but we were lucky, and we got two going. We had one that was a Dunout, which was a motorbike that I don't think you ever hear of today, and the other one was a two-stroke Baker, which we got running really well and used a lot, and a old BSA with the footboards instead of the footrests, and the oil pump on the tank for pumping the oil, and really had a lot of fun. And then I managed to get hold of a nice AJS just before I went in the army. I paid very little money for it, and it was my pride and joy. The trouble was getting the petrol. The darts I played in the village pub, and we used to have very good teams and go around to different pubs playing darts, which was great fun. And ferreting, going out at the weekends, ferreting, getting the rabbits, putting the nets down and getting the rabbits, and shooting with I had a 410 gun and a 12 bore gun, both single barrels, but I had really very, very good fun.
So you were probably a good shot.
Yes, I was a good shot. Yeah.
Let's move on. What age were you when you were in the Home Guard?
At 17, I went in the Home Guard, and it was good. The men from the village that made up the platoon they were from different walks of life. Some of them travelled to London to work, and some like myself were farm people, gardeners, coalmen, and they made up the platoon. And we had he had been my schoolmaster, who was the captain of that platoon, and he ran it on very good lines. That he had two sergeants that were out of the army not many years before the war started, and they were still quite smart and keen on discipline. So that we had the discipline from them, and we used to get to the yard. When we were at the yard, we used to get there so that we had time to try and get a drink in the pub, which was very close, and have a drink before we went into the duty on the home guard. And then through the evening, through the night, we done the patrols, and we finished up at about 6:30 in the morning, broke from the yard. And weekends we had about once a month at the weekend we would have some sort of training exercise, or we would go onto an area where it was safe enough and banked in, and we sort of set up a range, and we could do a bit of firing. We didn't have very much ammunition or, as I said, the weapons, but we did have a bit of training, a bit of practice. And the exercises we carried out, I remember once we carried out one against the Canadians, and that was a very very frightening exercise. They really thought that they'd got the real enemy, I think, and they, one or two of our chaps, they rather bashed them up, but it all worked out all right. And that is the sort of thing, and we would be called out sometimes. I know we had two instances where planes were brought down, and we were called out for that. And we were also called out in the village when they had a house bombed. But it was quite good training.
When the plane was brought down, what could you just elaborate on what you were required to do?
We were required to keep people back from the plane, and the one in particular where we got the ammunition from was brought, it had one of the mines on it. They were dropping mines from the planes, and the plane crashed, and of course it was quite a I'm not sure now. I don't think the mine went off, but it was a terrible crash in wooded country, and not too far from quite a lot of houses and old people's home. So but we were called out, as I say, mainly just to keep people away and until the proper services arrived to sort the thing out. But the ammunition that we got, we just helped ourselves.
Did the pilot die?
Yes, he did. And I think I think there was some of the crew, I think, tried to get away, but you know, we got them before they got too far, but they were trying to get away, and in all, it was a very lucky thing. The plane didn't. If the mine had gone off, it would have blown the whole thing, you know, to pieces.
Quite a fraught business.
Yes. Yeah.
What can you recall your feelings around this time? It was probably your first experience of something like this.
Yes, it was. Being there with it, it didn't, and being, as I say, on a duty, it didn't seem to bother me at all. I was very lucky, really. Even in the army, the things never frightened me, and it was a good thing, because the action in Burma, and that, it, I could take it very coolly, and so therefore I considered that was a great asset, really, and very lucky.
And did your father talk about his war experiences to you?
He just said that it was very bad. He'd seen too many dead. He could never forget it. And he was, I think he was in the Royal Dragoon Guards, which was horse. Regiment, and he had really a rough time, and I think that it did just shake him badly, and whether that rubbed off on me, and I thought, well, you know, I mustn't let it bother me, because I can honestly say that I went through the war really very comfortably. Not frightened at all, and that was a terrific thing, because a lot of poor chaps, they just couldn't stand it, and when you look back and think of the war in the First World War, and the things that men evidently were shot for, and that their nerves had gone. Today they put with the, it is called stress, and that, and they're treated for. There they wasn't treated; they were really just shot out of the way, as they classed more or less as traitors, really, which was a bad thing.
What was it like in your family when there was anticipation of war? What was it? How did your mother react?
No, she took it very calm, really, and she said that she certainly hoped that if any of us went, we would come back. My older brother was—he went into the army. He was called up, but he went just a little bit, a short time before me, and he went into the. He worked on plant nearly all his time. That was on bulldozers and excavators and that sort of machinery. He was more adventuresome, I think. He left home quite young and went working on plant, mainly up in the Midlands, and he went. So therefore, he went into the Royal Engineers, and luckily he came home. All right, he was in the second front in Normandy, and was on clearing the beaches and that, you know, right from the start, or pretty well from the start, I gather. And he had quite an experience. My parents received one or two phone calls one evening and said, "Oh, have you seen the evening paper? Your son Bill's on there about helping an evacuee. They'd got a picture in the paper of him, and so therefore he was the star. He was the star turn of the family." But that was, I think that was at Rosendale, I think. But he went after the war, and him and his wife, and they went and they visited the people, and he met he helped the mother push the child's pram through quite a bad area where there was quite a bit going on, and that was his limelight. Yeah.
What about your other brother?
And my other brother, he worked on the farm, and he worked at Dunsfold Aerodrome, which was being built. I was in the army then. But I gather it was the Canadians that were building this aerodrome at Dunsfold, and it's still used today. That's where they have the Hawker Harriers and that there. And then after the war, I think he felt that he couldn't be left out, so he went into the Royal Artillery after the war.
Did he volunteer?
Yes, he did. Yes, yeah, yeah.
Were the Canadians billeted around Hampden?
They were billeted mainly or camped at Whitley on the common there. I can't think of the name of the common name, but there was a terrific lot there, and the and in different private houses around at Whitley and Milford, Chiddingfold, there was a terrific lot of Canadians around, and
were there others as well?
Other troops, Free French. And then towards the end of the war, I think, or at the end of the war, there was Polish, and during the war there was some of the Free French around, and that is my argument today. They had all those different nationalities of people, and they didn't have the trouble in those days as they have today, nothing like, and the area really was very, very concentrated with troops. It's unbelievable, really, to think that there were so many troops in the area.
So it was a hive of activity.
It was, yes, yeah. There was, and of course the local people liked it. They had plenty of dances and social life going on, and there's one thing, you could always go into a public house, and if there were any Canadians there, in most cases, being a smoker in those days, which was the thing for nearly all young people to do, which is very much condemned today. But in those days, we used to smoke, and the Canadians always had cigarettes. We could buy cigarettes off of them where we couldn't buy them in our shops, and they were all great people.
Did you mix with them personally?
Yes, I did. yeah, and made good friends, and we had for a time. It was only a very short time, but they had a hospital out at Hydestyle, and that is between Godalming and Hambledon, and there they had the King George the Fifth Sanatorium, which was I think that was the